Welcome to the Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast. I'm your host, Beth Duran, alongside the man named after Ricky Romero. No Josh Tolley today. He's handling business on the farm in upstate New York. We miss him. He did text us, though. And he let us know, I'm sorry, guys, I can't be there today. So, you know, Tolley brings that different attitude, that vibe. Now I understand what you guys talk about, Ricky, when different guests come on and they talk about what Tolley does in the clubhouse. Because when he's not here, you feel that little void with him.
Yeah, no, yeah, you definitely feel it. But again, he's out there handling some business, and hopefully he's making big bucks or something. Hopefully it's not a meeting where he got in trouble or something. But no, in all seriousness, yeah, no, we've said it all along. Josh is the life of the party. He always has been, and is the reason why he's on this podcast. He just brings a different flavor.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, you've been busy. Okay, what do I do? I've been busy too, but you were busy. You've been doing a podcast machine, man. I heard you on Avery Sports Show, our good friend in Canada. Avery does a good job with that podcast, and you guys were going back and forth with him, and that was cool. And then you do your other podcast on The Athletic, which is all Blue Jays one. You are now a media machine, Ricardo Romero. Like, what happened to you?
Nah, man. I did that podcast. He reached out to me on social media. Listen, I get a lot of requests. I get a lot of requests on Twitter about doing podcasts and this and that. And I jumped on this opportunity. I figured I sometimes don't respond, or I get a lot, so it's kind of hard to keep up. And I saw this one and had a little bit of time, and I locked it in. We locked in a date, and it was a good chat. Yeah, we talked about Toronto Blue Jays, about a little bit about the glory days, about the current team, and it was a really good episode. And then The Athletic, obviously, that's been really fun, man. I didn't realize how fun it is to actually just talk about a team, and the team that I watch the most in the Toronto Blue Jays here at home. And yeah, you just find yourself talking about baseball and baseball only, which is, it's a good thing, because I feel like our podcast, Beto, and with Josh, it's such a cool vibe, and everything I hear from different people is how much they love it, how much insight they get. And then I go and do a baseball podcast about one specific team, and then you get to talk about guys, you get to talk about, like, the mechanics part of it, the analytical part of it, the everything from, like, what's a pitcher thinking, and stuff that we don't like to get into here for a reason, I go and do over there, and it's been fun. I mean, the host Drew has been awesome, and it's a good little vibe. I feel like we've meshed really good. We're about three or four episodes in, and hopefully it just continues to grow. And as far as a media guy, I still don't consider myself a media guy, but it's cool. It's cool. Again, if I'm not on the field, if what I get to do is talk baseball in front of a camera or a microphone, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, man. No, you did a good job, because when I was listening to Avery's podcast, you told the story how we started this podcast, Let's Go Ricky Rowe, where we just went to Arizona 3 years ago, Airbnb. We had no idea what we were doing, and just record some stuff. And obviously, we continue to grow and progress, and with the addition of Blue Wire helping us. And that's why when you listen to the podcast on iTunes or Spotify, you hear the commercials. We have them, which is pretty cool. So we continue to grow and evolve. And you're right, there's nothing like what we do. Now, your podcast with the Blue Jays, Spin Rate, which is really good and detailed. But as a guy who doesn't live in Toronto or follow the Blue Jays, I got lost on some of the people you guys are talking about, because I'm not watching it day to day, but it's good information. That's why I like what we do here. Excuse me. Because we just tell the stories. And last episode, when we had Dustin Garneau talking about, excuse me, man, my voice is still messed up, talking about the catching and the evolution of what's going on. And I told you the story that I went to watch my high school, Carson against Banning softball game last week. Senior day, so our good friend Alomar, his sister is on the team. And I'm in the outfield, Rick, and some guy just comes up to me and starts talking about how Garneau and what he was talking about, the catching aspect. And he's like, I had my son listen to it. And I'm like, that was cool, because we do the podcast, we put it out there, we promote it, And then you just never know where it goes. Because like I said, we have the people, our Blue Jays fans in the UK. We have people in Canada, people in Australia. And then to be in your own backyard and somebody comes up to you like, yeah, I was listening to it today and you guys taught me so much about the catching position. I'm like, wait, Garneau taught us, because this is like crazy what he was talking about, the insight that we get. And it was pretty cool just to hear that kind of stuff.
And hopefully he lands on his feet again, man. Yeah. It's tough being a backup catcher in the big leagues and a guy who's been a journeyman. He got designated for assignment yesterday. And you hope that another team is looking for a veteran guy, because he does bring that veteran presence to a clubhouse, and he's experienced. And you could tell how passionate he is about about the position. And I got to see him at Dodger Stadium. I went to Friday's game, got to check out BP, took both the boys with me, and that's cool. They still don't appreciate it, so it makes me want to slap them across the head sometimes. But they're like, three. Daddy, what are we doing down here? Let's go home. Let's go sit in our seats. I want ice cream. I want popcorn. I want candy. And I'm like, bro, like, look at this. Like, yeah. To me, Beto, every time, and I've done it more than a dozen times, you know, to watch batting practice at Dodger Stadium. But to me, there's always a certain feel when you're down there. At that stadium. You know, I've been to plenty of stadiums in my life, and maybe it's because I never got to play there as a major leaguer, but it always just brings a different feel. And you can say what you want about Dodger Stadium and the traffic. It does suck. The parking stinks. where the stadium sits, it stinks. But when you're in there, man, oh man, it's just such a different feeling. It's almost like you always get the most beautiful sunsets there, mm-hmm. and everything, like the field looks flawless. Shout out to Chaton and his crew for making it look beautiful. I can't wait to see what they come up with for the All-Star game. You know how sometimes they do all these crazy things on center field or in the infield. I can't wait to see what they come up with, because I'm sure it's going to look good. But there's something about going there and just watching a ball game. And I know I got to see you for a little bit before I had to leave. I mean, I'm surprised the boys lasted four innings, also credit to them. But you saw a little bit of the madness. It was like, let's go. It started like as soon as the sun went down, Diego's like, my middle child, Diego, he was like, hey, daddy, it's dark. It's time to go to sleep. Let's go home, like that, just right away. And he was ready, dude. These guys were so tired. But, you know, the next day I got to sit him down and I was like, hey, man, like you guys need to understand how lucky you guys are and how awesome it is for me to share these moments. And Sebastian kind of gets it a little bit more, obviously. But and he asked me why. And I said, because when I was your age, it meant the world to me to come here with my dad and sit in the outfield, and you guys haven't experienced that. And I feel like when they get a little older, I want to sit out in left field pavilion or right field pavilion with Sebastian, even though he might hate me for it, but he's going to have to wear it for a few games.
You got to do it. And now Dodger Stadium, the pavilion is a little different. It used to be back in the day, you had to sit there and you couldn't go anywhere. So for people who've never been to Dodger Stadium, up until a few years ago, whatever section you were in, you had to stay there. So if you were in the top deck, you couldn't go down to the reserve. Reserve couldn't go down to load. Now you can go anywhere you want. And it used to be the bleachers. If you were in left field, you had to stay in left field. You couldn't go near because there was only one entrance. You couldn't. It's like you're like on an island. So it's different. It's cool. But I get what you're saying, because you took your kids down there on the field and it was great. You were able to have them for BP. And you're like, appreciate this. You're like, well, the kid's 6 and 3 years old. Like they don't. Mm-hmm. One thing that you're right about Dodger Stadium, it's a different look. It's a different feel. I've done a lot of baseball games all over the country, and I've gone to a lot of fields, and you walk in as a reporter, and like, I just played in high school. That was it. But you appreciate a stadium. To this day, anytime I step onto Dodger Stadium, you get that vibe. And I guess it's because we grew up here, Rick, because you walk there, and the first thing I always do, I always look up to the reserve section. Because when you walk in through the dugout, you there, you look up and you're like, wow, like that's where I used to sit when I was a little kid, way up there. And now I'm standing on the dirt. And there's many people who've never gone on the field. I mean, at Dodger Stadium for Friday night fireworks, the reason people stick around is because you get to go on the field. And our friend Chateau will tell us that people for Friday night fireworks, you see them pulling grass out of the outfield and they take that home with them, or they'll get a little scoop of dirt and they take it home with them, or they spread people's
or they ashes. Drop ashes, yeah.
Yeah. Like that through it, because that's the specialness is for you. So like, I know,
but you know what, you know what, it's funny you say that, but I every time I like saw somebody from the National League come to, you know, to our team or whatever, the first thing I would ask, how was it playing at Dodger Stadium? And no one ever has anything bad to say about it. They say it's one of the best playing surfaces in the big leagues. Like it's so flawless. And I had my friend who left me BP passes, Drew Hutchison, pitches for the Tigers. He this is what he texted me. He said, Dodger Stadium, period. Best place to pitch, 10 times better than New York. And that's a guy that's pitched in at Yankee Stadium, at Fenway, and all those places. He said, no doubt, like it's the best. And again, it's the vibe I feel like that the fans create. Without the fans, obviously, there wouldn't be that vibe. And they're just so into the game. And the Dodgers obviously are really, really good this year. So it makes the vibe even better. And it's still like, there's only one thing in my, I did a lot of awesome things in my career, but there's only one thing I ever wanted. And this was from the day I got to the big leagues. I look at the schedule every year just to see if we were coming. I wanted Vince Scully to call one of my games. That's all I ever wanted. And it just never happened. But again, I had the privilege to be able to pitch in the big leagues and do a lot of great things, but that was the one thing. And I think about it all the time when people ask me, like, what would have happened if you came and pitched here at Dodger Stadium? I was like, honestly, it probably would have been insane. Not because the fans would have been rooting for me. I mean, not everyone knows who I am, but for my family, for my cousins, for my uncles, for you name it, like family members like that, it would have been huge, man. I mean, to go from a kid who used to, like you said, we used to buy those reserve tickets or those pavilion tickets for $6, I remember. Mm-hmm. And to be pitching on that mound would have been special. But again, it didn't happen. So all I can do is think about it.
Yeah. I mean, you did, like, you know, Anaheim was great. You had everybody there. And
Anaheim.
Yeah, our good friend Cesar Ramos, who pitched for the Angels. And he was there. And it was cool. But then when he came to pitch for, I think, Tampa, when they played the Dodgers, and his first thing he said was, Vince Scully shouting out El Monte, you know, like, you know,
El Rancho,
and he's shouting out Pico Rivera, like, just little details like that. So it's always cool. But yeah, so like, seeing you a Friday night at Dodger Stadium, I got there, what, the fourth inning, because of traffic. I got tickets last minute, and I'm like, yeah, I'll go. And an hour and a half later, I finally got into the stadium. I saw your kids with running out of batteries, and they took off. So it was good. It was fun to be there, just to be at the stadium and enjoying it. It's a lot of fun. So it just be there. But back to what you were saying about your kids not appreciating it, because when my kids were little, we'd go to the games all the time. I'd buy like the cheapest ticket and just go. And for the Dodgers, for the media, they have a media game, and what you're allowed to do is, you know, you go on the field and you play an actual game, and like Mario Duncan would throw baseball, and it was like a real big game. Our good friend Adrian Garcia Marquez would put on the gear, and he was catching, and I would like take my kids with me, and they would just in the dugout. My daughter Michaela was like 4 or 5 at the time, and was like, I don't want to be here. Now she's 12, and I'm like, hey, look at this picture of you in the dugout. She's like, oh yeah. And I've heard her tell people that, you know, I've been in the Dodgers field, I've been on the dugout, I've been there, like you don't even like baseball, kid. But that moment that you have, and you'll have that picture forever. Like, I have a picture of Mateo standing in a home plate doing a home run pose. Like, those little details that at the time they don't remember, but for you, Rick, it's cool. I'm glad you're able to do that with your kids, man.
Me too. And honestly, it's cool because, like you said, you're gonna see it. You're gonna look back at the pictures. I have a lot of pictures of them, obviously, in Toronto, with me. And you know, I have pictures of Diego as a baby sitting on the mound with Sebastian holding him, and just lots of pictures like that. And then obviously Dodger Stadium. And I have a picture of Vladdy holding Sebastian up in Anaheim, just stuff like that. Cause they're like, you ask them who their favorite player is, and they just say Vladdy. And it's just funny because, I don't know if you saw my story yesterday. Sandy says my sister Sandy, she's the second oldest. She's always trying to brainwash them into being Dodger fans, and she gets really mad. She's like, well, you guys don't live in Toronto. And I'm like, hey, like, chill.
Yeah, your sister's funny, man. Your sister Sandy.
Yeah, I know.
She's like, well, you know, they're a Mexican. I was like, Sandy, they're Canadian. These kids are Canadian. Leave them alone, bro. Leave them alone. So yeah, good stuff. But yeah, it was a good time at Dodger Stadium. We got to go. We got to do an adventure. I'm still trying to figure out a way to get to Toronto in July, Rick. I'm like looking, because I'm going to take my son back east to look at colleges. And I looked at it. It's not that expensive to fly from Boston to Toronto. I looked. It's like, what's going to give me?
Isn't there a train? No,
I don't know if there's a train. What's going to get me is the return flight from Toronto, LA. Holy smokes.
That's going to get you.
Yeah. That's what's going to get me. There's two of them. Like, I only have so many American points, but we'll figure it out. So hopefully in July I'm in Canada and we get to see that kind of stuff. All right. Anyways, what's going on here? Oh, here we go. All right. So we move forward as we continue to progress. You mentioned the stories of what we do and everything else, and we have fun with it. Did you see what happened with the umpires yesterday? I know it's a topic we don't want to beat up on it, but this happened yesterday. One of the umpires. No.
I didn't see it.
Okay, so a couple episodes ago, we really got into a story about umpires, and then people liked it. And I guess Joe West is coming out with his own podcast, so maybe we could Joe West.
Oh, no.
Yeah. MLB umpire Chris Fairchild yesterday made a mistake during the top of the fifth inning, a game between the Mets and Braves. He appeared to strike out Dansby Swanson. There was only one problem. Fairchild called the pitch a ball. So everybody thought it was a strike. He called it a ball. The reaction in between innings, Fairchild apologized to the pitcher. He owned in between innings, the Mets and
was
the Braves.
Was it Chris Bassett? Yeah.
Chris
Bassett. I did see that, actually.
Yeah. Before I give my opinion, I want to hear your opinion on this.
I like it.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with it, man. I mean, I've had umpires apologize to me, too. And say, hey, man, like, my bad. I've mentioned this in the in past episodes. These guys are human. Again, they're trying to do their work to the best of their abilities. And yes, they have their bad days. But again, we see the report cards. Me and you have been exchanging tweets about it. And it's like the people out there are so quick to report or tweet about the bad umpires or the bad games. But dude, you'd be amazed how many you see, you know, 98s, 99, 100s, even 95 and above, but nobody mentions that. And as soon as an umpire fucks up, it's like, oh, this is why we need robo umps. This is why we need robo umps. And it's like, no, man, if an umpire messed up and you go up to him and ask him politely and you're not showing him up, he'll be sometimes like we saw last night with Chris Bassett. He said, hey, my bad, you know, I missed it, and no big deal. Like you move on. You tip your hat off to that. And again, like, just, you know, don't let it fucking happen again. But seriously, like it's one of those things where, yeah, it's going to happen, man. And it's just, it's the nature of the game. And like Dustin Garneau said, we were always taught to move on to the next pitch, next pitch. And you know what? It shouldn't affect you. And if you let it affect you, then this is why sometimes this game can bite you in the ass. But if you're mentally strong and you're really working the process, the mental process, which is another topic for another day, then you shouldn't let it affect you. And again, this is. That's just my thoughts on it. I never let one pitch affect the outcome of how I was going to attack a hitter.
And that's where I kind of want to lead to with this. All right, so you would see, if you look at the video, SNY posted it, where Bass is walking off the mound and Fairchild looks at him and he kind of just taps his chest like, you know, my bad, I got it. Yeah, I messed up. And Bass just kind of nods his head and they move forward. And it's real quick for everybody to judge and say, oh, this and that. Like, it's hard doing that job. But I was just curious, you as a pitcher, how you would do that. And the reason I really wanted to get into that and see you led me to it is the mental side. You've talked a lot about Ken Revisa, the late Ken Revisa, who was a sports psychologist with you at Cal State Fullerton. And with my son Mateo, in our group chat, I'm always asking our good friend Alex Sanabia, hey, what books do you have for my son? Because You know, my son is a basketball player, but he's not a star basketball player. He's a grinder, and he's really into the sports psychology of it, which kid's 16, 17 years old. I'm like, this is fascinating. I mean, I've always been the one to, like, send him, like, the quotes about stuff, or, like, Tim Grover, who trained Kobe and Michael Jordan, great stuff like that. But Justin Sewell, who's now the mental skills coach for the Tampa Bay Rays. I've been trying to get with Justin, and schedules don't quite help out. He has his own podcast also. But the mental side is what I want to get with you, Rick. Pitching-wise, how do you take what Ken Revisa taught you and actually implement it on the mound? Because in baseball, you're the only guy with the ball. Like, how do you transfer that?
It took a lot of work. It really did, man. I mean, we started working with Ken in not my freshman year, my sophomore year. And we were off to a bad, bad start that year. And they brought him in. And when he first started talking, I was like, what the fuck is this? You know, I was like, what is this? And I was like, we don't even know. Like, what is this? Like, I had never even learned about taking a deep breath and slowing the game down, finding a focal point, next pitch. That was our, like, model that year when we won the national championship. Next pitch. You know what? Let's not think ahead. You know, let's stay in the moment, stay in the present. That was his big thing. And he didn't have, like, a secret recipe or anything. He just kind of brought you back down to earth. You know, if you went 3-for-3 or if you went 0-for-3, like, he used to call it, don't be a whore to the results. You know, because if everything's going well and you're not sticking to the process, but everything's going well, the game's going to come and bite you in the ass at one point. And one of the things Coach Horton used to say all the time was, like, don't be a whore to the results. Don't let the scoreboard at the end will let you know how if you work the process or not. And that's why I say it, you know, sometimes, and even you might not win a game, but if you did the right things, then to them that was a win, you know. And once we kind of bought in as a team at Cal State Fullerton with that, it was like night and day. Like, we were able to slow it down. Like, for me, it was like I was always so, like, you know, go, and at times I needed to kind of step off the mound and rub the ball, take a deep breath, and then if an umpire screwed me, it was like, all right, next pitch. What am I going to do? I'm going to be pissed, whether it's grabbing the rosin, slamming it down. Okay, next pitch. As soon as his whole thing was like, as soon as you get on that rubber, it's I'm here, I'm present, and I'm committed to this pitch. Because if you're not, then the whole process is messed up. And that's kind of the approach that we took, man. And I succeeded with that approach. And then in AA, I got my ass kicked. And who do I call? I call Ken. I remember, and I miss him, man. I wish we could have him on this podcast. Yeah. Obviously, he passed away a few years ago. Like, he was a gem of a person. And I remember I called him. I was in AA in New Hampshire struggling. I was like, any shit, man. I'm like struggling really, really bad. And he wasn't a guy that was going to sympathize with you. He's like, the first thing that came out of his mouth was like, good. I'm glad. Good. You need to get your ass kicked. You need to get your ass kicked. You need to know what you're made out of. And I was like, whoa, Kenny, like, shit, man. Like, this is stressful. Like, good. Like, good. Like, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do now? And then he gave me the tools to be able, okay, well, are you doing this? Are you doing that? Are you doing this? Write this down. Write that down. And that's kind of how I started believing in myself again. And then obviously, through my debut, it was like a lot of it was him and being able to slow it down. And then, you know, obviously have three and a half good seasons. And then that last half season was really bad. And as much as he tried to help me right there, it was like, it was such a mental grind for me in 2012 and then 13 and dealing with injuries. And once you're dealing with injuries and stuff like that, it makes it really, really tough. But yeah, man, that mental part of the game is something else. And, you know, I texted you guys this morning about listening to the All the Smoke Shaheen Holloway podcast, and he talks a lot about that, and I was pretty impressed, man. I mean, the guy took a small ass school in the NCAA tournament and freaking made them like not only a Cinderella team, but like everyone in the country was rooting for them. And but he like talks about, he's like, give me the 2-3-star recruit, and I'm gonna turn him into a 5-star recruit because I'm gonna make him mentally stronger, and I'm gonna make him this, and I'm gonna make him that, and and give me the guy that has the dog in him. I don't want the kid that's getting paid, you know, 10-20,000 to get flown across the country, and think that that's it. Like, I don't have no drive. And I was like, man, this is so true, man. Like, you know, like, don't, like, I guess the bottom line is, don't get so caught up on the results nowadays. Like, who cares if you don't win a tournament? Who cares if you don't go 3-for-3? Who cares if you don't throw a shutout? And that type, like, it's the development, and you want to see these guys succeed. And Kenny wanted to see us succeed, but he was going to do it in a way that he wanted to see us fail.
Interesting.
And if he saw us fail
from the failure, is what you develop.
Yeah. Yeah. The growth. And dude, I'm telling you, we were like 15-16 at Cal State Fullerton. And then we go on and win a national championship, and you saw, he used to carry a toilet. And where you would flush a bad inning or flush a bad at bat, and you saw guys in the dugout in Omaha flushing the toilet, like when they'd have a bad at bat, like
to forget it.
His whole thing was like, don't flush it just to flush it. Flush it whenever you're ready to let it go. Don't take don't take this out on defense. Yep, that's his book right
there. That's the book right there that I'm showing. It's called Heads Up Baseball. Ken Revisa, Tom Hansen, forward by Hank Aaron and Jim Abbott, playing the game one pitch at a time. So if you want to check it out. Heads Up Baseball. It's still available on Amazon. You can find that now.
That was like our Bible in college. And, you know, we went back to that book anytime we were feeling shitty about our game and stuff like that. And it was cool, man. It was
my question is for you, Rick. This was the early 2000s when you were doing this. So it was not like now where everybody's posting their motivational quote every single day. Like I tell my kid, like, don't be that kid who's posting the grinding, the working out motivational quote, but you're playing video games. You know, you're not doing everything. Like, don't be that guy.
Also, don't be the kid that is talking about the grind, because the grind's not about just going out there and putting in the work.
Yeah,
it's the quality of work that you're putting in. If you're gonna go out there and be like, oh yeah, I'm grinding, I'm gonna shoot 50 free throws and just fuck around, then that doesn't do anything, you know. But if you're putting yourself in game situations, and that was Kenny's big thing when we were throwing a bullpen to get us ready, to get me ready for game one in Omaha against the number one team in the country in University of Miami that had Ryan Braun, John Jay, had a bunch of studs. He said, and this is back in the day, and we're talking, you know, almost 20 years ago. He'd have a little recorder and he'd have the crowd. And as I was throwing a bullpen, he was like, all right, here comes John Jay leading off, leadoff hitter. Here we go. Now batting John Jay. And then he'd put me in the game situations and he'd make me mentally throw the first inning of the game. That's what like set me apart, I feel like, from a lot of pitchers in the country. I was ready. When I went into that game, I felt like I already had pitched 5 innings in my head. That I was like, all right, now I just got to go out there and execute. And we did. We beat them. I threw a complete game against them, and they were like the untouchable Miami Hurricanes of the tournament. And so then Jason Windsor, obviously, who was unbelievable that tournament, and we wouldn't win a national championship without him. He does his thing, and then we lose the third game. And I remember, in Omaha, it's 2-game elimination, and I'll never forget this meeting. After he sat us at the hotel lobby in Omaha, and he talked to us because it had happened to us in 09, or I mean in 02, when we went 2-0, and then University of Stanford or Stanford University beat us 2 in a row and eliminated us, and we were the best team, I think, in that tournament. Rice obviously ended up winning the national championship, and they were loaded, but we matched up well against them, but we just never made it. So it was almost like deja vu. It was happening again. But that first year we didn't have Ken Revisa. So that second year he like talk, and we were all in full uniform still, because obviously you don't shower. There's no clubhouse in college baseball. You go back to your hotel room and shower. Till we were ready to let go of that South Carolina game, it's when we were allowed to take off the uniform. So like you saw guys sitting there and just thinking. And it may, some guys took 5 minutes, 10 minutes, other took 30 minutes. And when you took off your jersey, it was time to let go of the game. No more talking about it. It was on to the next game, which was University of South Carolina again, because we had we ended up facing him again. But yeah, man, it was like there was so much stuff. There's so much stuff to the mental game. It's not just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna take a deep breath. No, man, it's working in actual process, and it's pretty neat when you get to tap into that world and actually you're successful. You're working the breath. You have a focal point.
Is that why you would look around on the mound?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah,
like you were looking into the stands, but you were looking for something.
Something, yeah. I always picked out usually either a sign or a flagpole, because every stadium has a flagpole. The little ball on top of the flagpole, like anything that I knew would bring me like a smile inside me, or like whether it was a beer sign, like I'm like, ooh, like okay, you know, like whatever it was, man. Like there was just always something that I would find. And if shit hit the fan, that's what I would go to. Again, It's not all about results. And like I said, you can't be a hoarder of the results every time and just be that witty guy when everything's going well, and then that sad guy when everything's going bad. No, you need to be able to find that, be even keel, you know, the ups, downs, just continue to work the process and good things will happen.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted to ask you about this, and I was actually just going to talk to you about this, having a conversation in general, is how did you, as a young college player who had never heard of any of this, open your mind to actually accepting it?
Because it took me a while.
It's a little bit different now because there's so much access and information for kids. But even then, though, you still have to be open to it.
Yeah.
What advice would you have to like a parent whose kid is like, say, 15, 16 and starting a struggle, and then they know that, you know, that something as simple as that could help them?
Yeah, pick up Heads Up Baseball. Honestly, it's an easy book to read. It really is. I mean, and I'm sure Ken Revisa would be proud of everything that the game, how the game has evolved, because like you mentioned, Beto, there's so many sports psychologists out there. Every team carries one now, and it's so big in the sport of baseball. And again, we're talking 20 years ago. It's not even that long ago that Ken was in this world, and the coolest thing was him dealing with he put a example of heart surgeons and how he would guide them through heart surgery. And he's like, these guys are dealing with life and death. Like, that's why when I talk to baseball players, it's like, oh, come on, man. Like, come on. You're worried about a game. Like I've dealt with heart surgeons and how they're going to perform surgery and the routine they had, the routine that he would set these doctors in, and just a deep breath. And dude, it was awesome listening to the story. The amount of stories that Ken Revisa had from working with heart surgeons, Olympians, and you name it, man, he did it all. And again, he was tapped into that world way before anybody was, I feel like. And this book, you don't have to read it in chapters. There's stuff that you could be like, oh, like this is where I need help. And it's got a chapter for that. And it's not I never read it from like first page to last page. It was like different things that I took from it, that I would apply to my game. And everyone's different, but yeah, man, I mean, it's the sports is not always about winning on the field. It's about winning in the mind and being able to apply that into just even normal life. And I know that's what it did for me, and that's what it continues to do for me. I've been very outspoken about the mental side and the mental issues that I dealt with. And, you know, from being really depressed in 2012 when shit hit the fan and all that stuff. And at that point, it was only so much Ken Revisa can do for me. But, you know, I was dealing with, you know, a hurt knees and everything was just screwed up. But again, Kenny was a big part of why I was so successful in my college career and then into my professional career.
Yeah, I'm looking at the reviews. You can still buy it on Amazon right now. And one of the reviews, one of the comments is from Hank Aaron, you know, Hall of Famer, who said, "I learned how to focus. It wasn't something I was necessarily born with." Like, that's Hank Aaron. You know, like,
Look at I mean, I'm sure we get some Dodger fans who listen to this podcast, but look at Justin Turner. Every time I watch him on TV, he still to this day does that routine, that Ken Revisa, where he kind of stares at his bat, he looks up and down, and then he goes, takes a deep breath, and then he gets in the box. And
really, from Revisa's Fullerton.
Yeah. Dude, that was our hitters, man. Our hitters had some kind of routine like that. Cesar Ramos, I mean, who pitched at Long Beach State, those guys, Jared Weaver, all those guys had a routine because he used to work with Long Beach State too, and which was a little bit of a – it was kind of funny, you know, when we would face off against each other, because I know it was really, really tough on him. He wanted to see both teams succeed. But yeah, man, you mentioned those guys, and he would talk about the routines that, to me, that Cesar had, because he knew we were good friends. And, you know, just, yeah, man, it was cool. Again, it was all that stuff was fascinating to me once I tapped into it, and I accepted it, like, oh yeah, like, this is what I need. This is what I need to do to apply to my game. And this is what's important to the game. Again, it's not all about results. It's not all about, like, wins and losses. Nah, man, if you went out there and you worked the process, then you succeeded.
Yeah, it's a
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
As I'm getting older, I'm 43, and I start paying attention. You know, they always say, as you get older, you start appreciating and things slow down. And, you and I exchange the tweets that Tom House has. Tom House, who's in his 70s and is now talking about how, go play baseball, have fun. You don't need to record everything. You don't need to win a championship ring every weekend at the age of 8. You know, like, nobody cares who the best middle school kid is and just the process of what's going on. And there was the grown man, 32-year-old who got called up by the Giants last week, who was in the minor leagues for 10 years, over 1,200 minor league games, and finally made his debut at the age of 32. And I went back and did research on him. The man was an eighth round pick coming out of Dallas Baptist. Like, eighth rounder, that means they're thinking something of you. It's not
hard,
but they're thinking there's something in you. And to go and get to the major leagues 11 years later, like, the mental aspect of what's going on, how many times did he get let go or get people to tell you to quit? That's why it's fascinating what baseball guys go through. I've dealt with football guys. Cool. Basketball guys, whatever. But the mental anguish that baseball guys go through because there's so much downtime, that's what's fascinating to me right now.
It tells you it's not easy to make the big leagues. I don't give a shit who you are. It's not easy. You know, everyone, that's why I say, like, it sucks when you see kids who are being pushed by their parents, like, at a young age. And we've tapped into this before. And it's just like, he's not going to be a big leaguer overnight. It's not an easy world. You know, like you mentioned, you have to have some mental toughness. It's not about results and being the best player. It's about, you know, being able to talk to your kids and talk to them about failures, explain to them failures and explain why sometimes things don't work out. And just, that's just the way baseball is. And as I mentioned before, with Sebastian, him getting called up to a higher division and him struggling and me having to explain to him, I enjoyed that conversation. Yeah. But the fact that he said, "Daddy, I'll be ready next season for it," that's all I needed to hear, you know. And it's making him understand, not making him feel like shit and say, "Hey, man, like, come on, like, like Josh has says, are we hard on our kids sometimes? Yeah, there's a little bit of tough love. Yeah, which is totally fine. But explain to him why you're doing certain things."
Yeah.
And like, we had a game this past weekend, and I was like, "All right, Sebastian, I want you to be a little bit
more vocal." How old is he? Like,
6.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, just be a little bit more vocal about when you're asking for the ball, because, you know, there's so much screaming, like, throw it to first, throw it to second. And I'm like, dude, ask for the ball. Just raise your hands and say, right here, to whatever the kid's name is. Dude, he was doing it, getting the ball. And you can tell he was into that. It's like little tapping into their little brains and just saying like, do this and hey, scream it out loud, you know, scream as loud as you want, you know, for them, for him to throw the ball at you. And he was doing it, getting the ball. And again, when you're able to do stuff like that, it's cool, man. And you see the development and every year it gets better. And again, the whole, this whole like little league world, it's crazy. I mean, I had a friend, you'll laugh at this. I had a friend tell me this is the next division, the division that Sebastian didn't want to play in because obviously he struggled a bit. And again, he belongs in the division that he's in now. But it was just a test. But he was saying that this other coach that they were, my friend, my neighbor said they were playing a team and it was going for them. They were losing. And they kind of started catching up a little bit, putting a little bit of pressure on that team. And that coach complained to the umpire that the opposing coach had a 2 or 3 year old in a dugout and that wasn't allowed. So they made the coaches like, the mom's not here. Like, I got to watch him. He's not doing anything. He's just sitting in the dugout. So they made him. So he said, in principle, he's like, he took out his kid and had to go watch his kid, his baby on the sideline because the other coach didn't want him to do that. So then not only that, they put the coach who complained to coach third base of this team, and he kept stopping all the kids at third base so they wouldn't score on his team. And the third thing was, what did he say? He's like, yeah, man. So then we're making a comeback. It's 8-6, bases loaded, last inning. And then he complained that to the umpire, hey, you need to stop the game because we've ran out of time. And then the game ended 8-6. And I'm like, oh my God, man. Like, this coach is lucky I wasn't there coaching. Because, you know, that's the type of stuff. I'm not like, obviously I'm not saying like into violence or anything like that. Yeah, yeah. Come on, man. Like, what are we doing? Like, is that win really going to affect you? Is it not going to let you sleep? Is it going to let you sleep better at night?
It happened, Rick. And I've told you, it's going to get worse as you get older. I just told you.
The car, I was like, there's no way I can let anybody. I'm like you said, I'm seeing it now. And I'm like, you know what? It makes me want to coach. Like, yeah. Like be the head coach. Like right now, I'm the assistant and stuff like that. But as Sebastian starts moving on up, I feel like I want to be a little bit more hands-on and have a little bit more of a say about what.
Like, I when I saw your son Sebastian Dodge game, when I tell him, like, Sebastian, you had a game? He's like, yeah. I was like, what kind of snacks did we get? Oh, he told me all the snacks. What was happening? Yeah. I'm like, that's what matters, Sebastian. Yeah, but yeah, Rick.
Yeah.
Like, when I told you that there's 6 U travel teams, you didn't believe me. It's out there.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. But anyways, that's not our rant right there. It was good. I just wanted to get caught up in this and, like, the mind games of what goes on is fascinating to me. And just give a little shout out to Ken Revisa. So the book again, if you want to see it, it's on Amazon. I just looked at it. Heads Up Baseball, Ken Revisa, Tom Hansen. So if you have a young baseball player or if you're a coach in high school, this is good. It's especially for the kids to go and figure out on their own. Like, the mental side is so damn hard. And I had to explain to somebody last week that when you get drafted, you don't go to the major leagues right away. A friend of mine, because this person doesn't know baseball. I think because we're in baseball, we know how the system works, but the majority of the people don't. And a friend of mine said that their cousin or somebody that they know has a kid who's a potential first-round pick. And they're like, that's good, right? So whoever gets picked on, that's where he's going to play. I'm like, no, he's going to go to Auburn, New York, or, you know, Sarasota, Florida, Dunedin, they're like, or a complex. They're like, well, why would – if they're going to give him millions, why would he go to these lower leagues? I'm like, because he's 18. Like, they don't know. I'm like, people don't know that.
Can you imagine, though, like, being an 18-year-old kid in the big leagues? Like, how mentally tough that would be?
Andrew Jones, who was what, 19? A-Rod, 19?
Freaks. They're freaks. It doesn't happen very often.
No.
But crazy. Yeah, it's not something that's easy. There's so much development that happens that you don't know at the college level, at the high school level, you know, to go to pro ball. I mean, there's Josh Beckett, you know, that's an exception. That, again, it happens. But if it was that easy, every first rounder would go straight to the big leagues. And I feel like the road to the big leagues now for college players is a little bit quicker for some. You know, you're seeing more younger and younger guys get called up. And it's like Alec Manoah, you know, He was in the minors. I don't think he ever played above short season, I want to say. He got put it together. Obviously COVID was a little different, but he's a guy that, yeah, maybe spent a year in the minors and then boom, he's thrown in the fire and he's succeeding. But again, there's exceptions, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff to learn. And when you get there and you see the kind of arms there is, first of all, those Latino kids who are throwing 95, 100, you know, and have no idea where it's going, but they have a great arm, and they have to teach them like how to harness their stuff, believe in their stuff. And you're trying to hit, or you're trying to do it. There's a lot of, you're like, you start looking around, you're like, oh my God, that guy's better than me. Oh my God. Like all that mental part of it. It's like, yeah. Like for me, I was like, damn, like they drafted another left-handed pitcher. Shit. They must not believe in me. You know, like stuff like that creeps in. But at the end of the day, if you stick to your plan and stick to yourself, yep, and you're confident in your abilities, then you'll succeed.
Yeah, and if you're new to the podcast, go back to one of the original episodes. I think it was episode 4 or 5. Travis Snyder, who recently retired, yeah, was in the major leagues at 20, and then just talked about, yeah, the struggle of trying to stay in the major leagues. And it just, mm-hmm, it's all fascinating. That's why I love talking baseball with you, Rick, and I love this different perspective.
It is. I mean, it's cool, man. Yeah, I don't think we've ever talked about the mental side like this, but I wish Josh was here, and because I feel I'd be curious to see how, like, what he has to say. Obviously, he's seeing it from a different standpoint in his experience. Right. But yeah, man. I mean, Ken Revisa was one of the greatest things to happen to Cal State Fullerton baseball in 2004 when we won the national championship, and in 2005, and for myself in my career. And he was easy to get a hold of. I actually went to his house more than a couple of times and just would sit there and shoot the shit with him. And yeah, man, it was cool. Like, he's just, yeah, I mean, obviously the game misses him, but I feel like he's probably up there chilling and talking baseball like he loved to do. And I know he was a big fan of the sport. And again, the mental side is something that's so fascinating, and we see it a lot now. And I'd like to sit in and on a big league team and see what's being talked about and how it's being taught, because I know when I went to the Giants, they had a guy, his name was Darren, and he was awesome. And it's almost like I was listening to Ken Revisa, and he was a huge fan. Like it's crazy the influence that he had. Like he was like, oh, like you'd mentioned, oh, I work with Ken Revisa. They're like, what? Like, how was that? Like, it was like the greatest thing ever, you know? And I'm like, yeah, man. Like I talk to him all the time. Like, what's the big deal? But to these guys, these sports psychologists, that was like the
godfather, like
the godfather of it all, you know? And yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's cool. It's good that baseball is taking that step. And I know it's been more than a few years now that they have. I know the Blue Jays have a guy who played actually at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, Jimmy Van Astron, who went into that world. And he's in the dugout with the team, and he's their kind of their mentor.
Yeah.
Guy. I mean, a guy I want to get on this podcast, Beto, honestly, Daniel Bard. He was a freaking sports psychologist with the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Daniel Bard?
Yeah, dude, look it up. So he was with the Boston Red Sox when I was
in the big league
pitcher. Yeah, and he was on my USA team. And by the way, one of the most explosive arms I've ever seen in person, okay, playing catch. He threw like 100 at a University of North Carolina. He played for Team USA. He was on the same team as I was, and went to Boston, succeeded, did really, really well. And then he got like the mental part of it, like fucked him up. Like they turned him into a starter. He couldn't throw strikes. He struggled throwing strikes. He bounced around different teams. His velocity.
Wait, is this the guy who retired?
Retired.
And he's the back?
And retired, went back to school to get his degree and or something like that.
What?
And he was he's a mental coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I think they said he was either playing catch or started feeling good and said, you know what? I think I got it back. And then he did get it back, and now he's closing for the Colorado Rockies, dude.
That guy. He was like the comeback player of the year a couple years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Him.
He was a mental.
It's amazing.
He was a mental skills coach.
Look it up.
I'll look into that. Yeah.
I'll look into that. Yeah, man. I mean, we follow each other on Instagram, and we've messaged a few times. But yeah, that's a guy that I would. What a story! Like, first of all, this guy was like the, what was he? Him and Andrew Miller were the 1-2 punch at University of North Carolina with the Tar Heels, and they were like high draft picks. And yeah, he was mental coach at the Arizona Diamondbacks.
He was out of baseball, signed by the Diamondbacks as a franchise player mentor. And helping out like with the mental skill side. And then he just threw for scouts 2 years later and he got signed. I didn't know that. Wow, that's crazy.
Dude, you see him on TV now. He's like throwing 98, 99, man. Crazy. It's like the old Daniel Bard that I saw in college.
He's 36 years old. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played at Georgia Tech.
No, North Carolina.
Oh, his brother Luke went to Georgia Tech. I'm sorry. All right, yeah, I love to have somebody like that on. That'd be great. I got to read into that. I thought he was like a guy who got, you know, when you hear comeback player of the year, somebody who got hurt, I thought he was like a Tommy John guy. Holy smokes, he was out of the game.
Out of the game.
Baseball. Baseball's great. Come on, Ricardo, you got some bullets left in the arm?
Nah.
All right, so yeah, you mentioned Josh Tully was not here. No show next week. I have to work next Tuesday. I got a fight coming up, Zulu Ramirez. So next Tuesday, I got to do a bunch of stuff. So no show next week, so enjoy yourself. But we did find Tully. He's on the side of the road somewhere.
Those are great, dude.
Mikey V always finds a way to have Tully involved on the show, so we'll get him going. As always, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. And I can't wait to send that to Tully, and he'll respond to us in 3 days from now. A good podcast. Again, the book, Ken Revisa. We'll check it out. Mikey V, thank you for watching. ELC, all brings up Kato was 9 years in the minors, of course. I love you in the hat. This is the Vancouver Canadiens hat.
That's right. Yeah. Goes Kato. Yeah. From Toronto Blue Jays. Yeah. 9 years in the big leagues or 9 years in the minors and then just made his debut recently and got his first base hit. I want to say four days ago. And yeah, man, I mean, it's cool when you see stories like that. Again, it's the mental grind that these guys had to go through. The physical part, they can do it. You know, they can go out there and play with the best. There's no doubt about that. When you stick at that at the AA, AAA level, you can do it. It's the mental part of it. And whenever you see stories like that, I know for you and I, Beto, you see stories like that. It's cool, man. It's what it's all about. I mean, again, I don't want to keep rambling on, but that kid or not even kid, that man for the Los Angeles Lakers, how many years did he spend in the G League?
Oh, Andre Ingram? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and then he became a sensation, you know, like in LA for a few, it probably made his whole life, you know, and the mental grind to be able to go through that and then put on
uniform. Back in the G League, still doing it. Still shooting. All he can do is shoot threes. Like that's what he does.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. All right, so Rick, we'll talk to you next in 2 weeks. We'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks, When is that? May 17th, we'll talk to you. We'll have a good show. Maybe we'll get you – let's try to get Bard or one of these mental skill guys. I love the story. And I'll work on Joe West. I want to give a shout-out to the person who sent me that DM. And as always, thanks to all the people who got the stickers, the show and everything else. This person's name is – Just Me. Just Me, ELC. Oh, who's watching right now? Oh, man, there's your shout-out. Just Me, ELC. Joe West has a podcast coming out. I know he would love to come on. Let's go, Ricky Rowe. He's available to be a guest. So Just E. We'll have Tully facilitate that one with Joe West. We'll figure things out. All right. As always, rate, review, subscribe. Appreciate you guys listening. Another edition of Let's Go, Ricky Rowe podcast. Adios.
Peace.